anger is really a 1, 2, 3, 4, where 2 and 3 are invisible. And the first invisible thing that causes anger is we don't realize that we don't see reality the way it really is.
Welcome to Elevate, the gathering spot for first responders, their families, and the communities that support them. We bring you honest conversations and actionable insights, focused on building resilience and finding balance in places we never thought to look. Each episode is your open invitation to broaden your understanding, shed new light on perspectives, and explore new ways to manage the weight we carry. It's about fortifying bonds, welcoming fresh ideas, and acknowledging every step forward. Together, let's elevate. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Elevate Podcast. Want to appreciate you coming back in and checking out our guests that we bring in. Before we get to our guest, I just want to make sure that you like, subscribe, and go ahead and hit that bell so you get a notification when we either go live or when we put up new episodes. April 2nd is going to be our launch of the podcast. You're going to see my guest on there as well as one other guest. And it's going to be, I believe it's going to be a great couple of podcasts that you can really sink your teeth into. A couple of really good things that I believe every first responder should know and should have in their repertoire of knowledge. These two gentlemen that I'm going to be having on. So, all right, well, let's go ahead and bring on our guest. Dr. Mort Orman is our guest today, and he is an anger management professional doctor. I'm not sure what you actually call yourself. Go ahead and introduce yourself to everybody and tell them what you do.
Yeah, well, I'm actually an anti-anger management expert. I'm an anger elimination expert.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a medical doctor. I've been an internal medicine doctor for 50 years, and I've been helping people eliminate anger and stress for over 40 years. And the anger focus is what's my main focus over the last couple of years, really trying to reduce the amount of anger and hatred and division, hostility in the world today, kind of one person at a time. And that's kind of like my mission and my goal right now.
Fantastic. So what got you into this? Is it when you were in your practice, what did you do in your practice? Because you're retired now.
Retired from my practice now, but I was in an internal medicine. I was a solo internal medicine practitioner. Okay. And in my 20s and 30s and my early years of practice, I had a lot of anger. You know, personally. It was a problem for me. It was something that I wasn't proud of, but I just couldn't control my anger. I would get angry at myself. I would get angry at my patients. I would get angry at anybody. I got angry at my parents as I became a teenager and started, you know, kind of differentiating myself from them. We were in the typical conflicts that normally brings on. I took up tennis in my late 20s. And I don't know if you ever saw John McEnroe play tennis.
Yep.
That was me on the tennis court.
Was on the line.
not the tennis prowess, but the anger and the smashing of the rackets.
Yeah.
And all that. I could do that.
Right.
I could compete with him on that. So, but that was me. And I no matter what I tried to do, I could not control the anger. It would just take me over and I'd start yelling and screaming mainly at myself, or thrashing my racket or just getting angry in general. And I tried all the standard anger management stuff and stress management stuff, and you know, it really didn't help all that much. I'd wake up every day and I'd be like Groundhog's Day. I'd be the same angry person.
Oh, wow.
Which, by the way, is my birthday, by the way, is Groundhog's Day.
Today is?
No, Groundhog's Day is my birthday. So it's kind of like, but it was literally like that. It was like every day you'd wake up and you're the same angry guy, no matter what you tried to do the day before, you know, to lessen it. So, so that's really where I got started with this whole anger thing. And you know, and when you're practicing medicine, you see the impact of anger on your patients. You know, when you see the angry patients and you see the patients who are not so angry and you follow them over time and you get to see what happens. And it's a very different picture for the group that's angry than the ones that aren't. And you see they have more heart attacks and strokes and high blood pressure and addictions and divorces.
And some of that anger... Right. And some of that anger can come from the ACEs score, you know, I mean, that was probably early childhood trauma.
Yeah.
That was the reason why they're angry. And then as they got adults, they didn't know how to package that properly. Yeah. So they kept on getting angrier. And then
And then, like you said, like, you know, I believe when I looked at the ACEs score, there's like some sort of weird percentage about how more likely that you are later on in life to develop heart disease and diabetes and all that stuff because of the early onset stress, which, you know, anger, of course, is just
part of. Yeah. So I'm watching it every day I go into my office. I'm seeing this parade of people come through, and over time you see what happens. And, you know, and then you're sitting there with your own anger that you don't know how to, know how to deal with. And you're thinking, oh my God, if I don't do something about this, I'm going to end up, you know, with some of the problems that some of my patients have now. And of course, most of them were a lot older than me at the time when I started out, you know, as a young doctor. Okay. So, so that really spurred me on to say, I got to find an answer. And I kept searching, I couldn't find anything that really helped. And then I I made a great decision to do personal development work, which, you know, a lot of business professionals just feel like they don't have the time to do. But I thought it was important enough, and I was so motivated to get rid of this anger because of what I was seeing. So I decided to do personal development work. I did it for a couple of years, and I was fortunate. I had some good programs I got involved with. I cobbled together a bunch of stuff from different programs, and I finally came up with a system for myself to deal with my anger. And I had other problems. I had a lot of anxiety issues, public speaking fear. Like, I would have never done this.
Oh, wow.
I would have been so terrified to be on camera. But so I had all this public speaking fear, and I had all this anger, and my relationships would just fail one right after another. Every relationship with a woman that I got into, you know, would start off fine, and then it would, you know, eventually deteriorate. Yeah. So I had all these issues that I kept struggling with, and I finally figured out what the hell was going on with me.
Okay.
Which is important, a new piece of information.
We got to know what's going on with ourselves before we can help others.
That was
right?
kind of like the missing link, you know, the thing that I didn't understand. And particularly with anger, I didn't really understand how I was generating anger inside. You know, I knew that everybody can see the external things that make you angry, but almost nobody knows what's really generating the anger inside, which is what I eventually hit upon. And having those puzzle pieces available that weren't available to me before made all the difference in the world in how I was able to deal with my anger. Finally, I was finally able to get my hands on the controls because I now knew what the internal causes were, the invisible causes. And that's basically what I've been teaching about and writing about and promoting, helping people understand that anger is not like a 1-2 cause effect, direct, you know, one causes two, one being whatever the event is you see, somebody misbehaves, somebody betrays you, lies to you, steals from you, whatever it is, you feel the anger.
You take your thumb with a hammer. Angry. Yeah.
You feel it or they step on your toe. You feel the anger. Okay. Yeah. And you think it looks like one causes two. The event caused the anger because they happen right after one right after another. And what we don't realize, it's really a 4-step process. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, where 4 is the anger. 1 is the event that we see, but there's 2 steps in the middle that are invisible.
Yeah. That's mind blowing.
I didn't know that.
Right. Yeah. I didn't know that either.
Teach you that in medical school.
Right. So is that like your secret? Is that your secret weapon? Yeah. Is that something you can expand on, the two secret ones in the middle?
I can talk about it, but because I'm happy to promote the information because it's so missing. It's so missing from our education, our life education.
Oh, there's so much missing from our education. Hence the reason why I'm doing the Elevate podcast, because I was never educated in any of my healthcare upbringings, not only respiratory therapy that I did before I became a paramedic, but in my paramedic school, we never had any resiliency or fortification training, no anger management training. Yeah. Like, they didn't bring any of this stuff up, which is like, if we could have just had a clue that some of this stuff could have been coming into our career, at least we would know how to package it better and maybe unpackage it once it hit us, right?
So I'm happy to share this information because it's needed. I mean, it's like, I think you shouldn't be allowed to graduate college without understanding where your emotions come from, you know?
Without understanding
how human beings destroy relationships that they value. You know, if you don't have that grounding in real life, you know, how to win at life and be successful in life and happy in life and not be stressed, then you should, I mean, that's a crime that colleges are graduating people right and left that don't have those insights and don't have those skills. So I want to try and remedy that as best I can and make this information available. So again, it's a force. Anger is really a 1, 2, 3, 4, where 2 and 3 are invisible. And the first invisible thing that causes anger is we don't realize that we don't see reality the way it really is. Our brains filter down whatever is coming in through our senses because it's too much. There's just too much coming in. They can't process it all. So it packages it for us. It reduces it, it simplifies it, and it leaves a bunch of stuff out. Okay, so when we're looking at the world, we're not realizing we're looking through internal filters where our brain is filtering things. We think we're seeing real reality, raw, you know, absolute reality. We're not. We're just seeing pieces of it. We're seeing parts of it. That, however, we get conditioned, you know, what to favor, what to look at, all that kind of stuff. So the first invisible step is there's three filters that we see the world through that cause the actual causes of our anger inside. Okay, you have to be thinking and perceiving in three particular ways. So those ways, just to show you what those ways are. So the first thing is you have to be thinking that somebody did something bad or wrong they shouldn't have done. Because we don't get it.
Whether that be you or
someone
else.
It could be your computer. If you get angry at your computer.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
It's doing something it shouldn't be doing. It's giving me a blue screen.
Oh, I'm so cranky when tech doesn't work. Oh, I'm such a cranky guy when
I can't find the cursor, you know. It should be right there. Right, so it's doing something it shouldn't be doing. Somebody or something's doing something it shouldn't be doing. That's bad and wrong. Somebody was hurt or harmed or negatively impacted. Okay. So you notice we don't get angry if we think somebody, if we look out and we see something that's wonderful, terrific, fantastic, or we don't see any hurt or harm, you know, or somebody's really benefiting from what's going on. We don't get angry about that. Okay. We only get angry when it's bad and wrong that they're doing and hurt and harm that they're causing. And then the third filter is we see that perpetrator as being unilaterally to blame. So it's kind of 100, you know, it's almost like 100%, like we have these blinders on. We only see their actions. And we see only their responsibility in the matter, and we think that's the whole story. Okay,
right. Two sides of every story.
Sometimes 3 and 4.
Four, yeah, right.
So we have these three filters that we don't understand. We don't realize whenever we're angry, we're looking through these three filters. But we are every time. Okay, right. And then the other thing that we don't see, the third step that we don't see, is our brains and our bodies immediately take those filtered perceptions, and they immediately tell us they're true. So it's like they stamp them. They right. stamp them as being true, and our brains tell us, no, you're not. It's not filtered reality. It's real reality, and not only that, it's the whole reality. It's the whole story. End of story.
Finite. Boom. Black
and
white.
Don't even think about anything else. This is how it is. Okay. So it comes through the filters, and then our brain says it's not filters. It's the truth. Those are the two internal causes of anger that I didn't realize were going on inside me whenever I got angry. And what it turns out is when you understand that and you actually go back and you say, okay, well, were these three things that came through my filter, were they really true? Could there be flaws and could they be missing anything? Could there be pieces of the puzzle that were left out? You know, and you often find out when you ask those questions, like, oh my gosh, I didn't see things quite accurately. And that's why I got angry. Yeah. And if I'd just seen them more accurately, there would have been nothing to be angry about. But I didn't. I saw them. I didn't realize it, but I was getting a distorted view of reality. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's like one of the things I like to say is that we don't realize that our own brains on a daily basis produce more fake news than all the media is put together.
So right.
And we think we're seeing things perfectly correctly, and we're really, it's just. Right.
Well, you and I could see something at the same time. Yeah. You and I could see the same car accident at the same time. and have two different aspects and two different emotions from that car
accident.
You could have a horrible emotion because it reminded you of a car accident that you had when you were a young kid or something, or when you were a few years ago or whatever, and it brings you back to that time that you didn't feel great. Yeah. But I was like, okay, I've never been in a car accident before. Not that I have, because I have. But you know,
and that shows you shows you it's not the event. It's the filter. It's the internal filters. I use a similar story. I use a common story. You're standing in a grocery store. You and a friend are in a grocery store and shopping one day. And you look down the aisle where you're standing and you see a mother and a kid, and the kid's misbehaving, young kid. And finally, the mother gets exasperated and hauls off and slaps the kid pretty hard. Okay. And you're both standing there side by side witnessing that event. And let's say one of you gets really angry at the mother and the other one doesn't. You just had different filters on that, you know, different ideas of parenting, perhaps. I'm not saying one's right and one's wrong. I'm just saying, you know, there's one that says one view is that corporal punishment is bad and you shouldn't hit your kid and should never do that, blah, blah, blah. And there's another potential view where you say, well, but that's going to strengthen that kid. It's tough love. It's, you know, it's going to be good discipline for them. You know, and you could have two people with two different filters, the same, like you say, same car accident, same event, different internal emotions. Because the filters they looked through were different, and neither of them probably would even realize that they're looking through filters. It's just the way things normally show up for them and how they normally feel about stuff. Okay. Wow. So that's that. Those were the two missing puzzle pieces for me, that when all those times in my 20s and 30s when I tried to control my anger and I couldn't, it's because I didn't appreciate where it was really coming from. And I didn't have the opportunity, because I didn't understand that, I couldn't ask the questions. This is true. This is not true. Or not. Just to give an example, my wife and I are about to celebrate our 40th wedding anniversary.
Oh, congratulations.
Which never would have happened if I hadn't discovered 40 years ago how to get rid of most of my anger by doing this process. So by the time we got married, I had gotten rid of most of my anger. She never had a lot of anger in her. So consequently, we've had very little anger in our marriage. Okay, we don't fight very often or anything. But early on in our marriage, I noticed there was this one weird situation. It was really strange, where we'd start getting really testy with each other. We'd start getting angry with each other. And it was so rare that it stood out like a sore thumb. You know, if you're getting angry all the time, all day long, you're not going to notice one from another. But since we had a baseline of like no anger, when something anger popped up, it really stuck out. You know, so this happened like two or three times in a row. And I realized I said, something's going on here. And when it would only happen when we went on car trips somewhere, a car vacation.
Oh, that's a big one. Okay. Because I get cranky too on car trips.
And the other interesting thing was we never got angry with each other when we drove to our destination. We didn't get angry at each other during the trip when we're there. It was only when we drove home.
Okay.
Which made it even
because you don't want to go home.
Weirder. You know, it's only when we drove home.
Right.
And after like say two or three times, I saw this pattern. I said, okay, what's going on here? And then I realized that what would happen usually is I would usually be driving home and we'd go a little ways. And eventually my wife would say, oh, there's something over here I'd really like to see. It's only like an hour off of our path. Let's go over here and see that. And I would go like, no, we're not doing that. You know, with a tone. And then she would go like, what do you mean we're not doing that? And I would go like, we're not doing that. And of course I had control of the wheel, you know, and I was driving the car. And then we start arguing with each other and she would be upset with me. I'd be upset with her. And I realized I looked at those three. Once I understood those three filters, I said, okay, so am I judging her to be doing something bad and wrong that she shouldn't be doing? And I went, yeah, I am. Because you're not.
Oh, you're judging her. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Because she's telling me to go off the path home. And to me, that's bad and wrong. Okay. And then I asked myself, is it really true that her wanting to go off the beaten path is actually bad and wrong or not? And I said, oh, well, actually, it's not that she's wrong. It's just that's not how I would do it. It turned out to be that's not how my family did it. My family, when we went on car trips, we would go directly home. We'd stop for gas or for food, but we'd never go off. Her family was different. She was an only child. Her mother would often say to her father, oh, let's go see something over here. And they'd go off and they'd go see that. So they'd zigzag around all the kind of, that's how she did it. And so once I saw that, and I did have an angry tone in refusing her, I really saw what she was doing as a wrongness, a crime. that deserved right. somebody being angry about. You shouldn't, thou shalt not deviate from the road home.
Yeah, from the road.
Yes, or the path. And, right. and as soon as I was able to do this, you know, understand what was going on and realize, no, she's not really doing something wrong. It's just different than how I would do it. Then that really cured the problem, because from that point on, I said, no, it's not wrong of her to do that. And, you know, if she wants to go over and see something, it's my job. Part of my job as a husband to support her in what she wants to do. So sure. So from that point on, every time she says, let's deviate from the path we're going to do something, I say, sure, honey, if that's what you want to do, let's go do it. So it completely right. eliminated the problem. Once I saw what the source of the problem was my judging her negatively for something that she really wasn't doing wrong. So that's an example of how one of these three filters can be misleading. They can be mistaken. And if you don't know what they are, you don't know the right questions to ask. You may not.
Yeah, that's important, because if you, knowing the right questions is important. Yeah. I mean, just to flash back on a problem I had last week at work, actually, when I was on duty, there was something I did. It was a mistake. Mm-hmm. I made a mistake, and it wasn't about, it wasn't patient care, but I made a mistake and I got really mad at myself. I mean, you know, I'm also a handyman, and there's often times that if I'm like working on stuff and I get angry and I can swing a hammer and hit something that doesn't hurt anybody, but just gets my frustration out. That's kind of how I've noticed my temperament happening yeah. over the years yeah. is like, okay, if I have a place where I can actually, you know, throw something or hit something, you know, not a person or anything like that, or fists, sure. but you know, if I can just get some frustration out, I feel better. And then I'm done. You know, it's like, I don't build it up inside. Yeah. I'm one that gives it off in the moment and then, yeah. and then feel.
But I would call that, that's downstream from the anger. So the anger got generated. We're talking right. about generating the anger. And then there's, do you do with it when you have it, you know? And,
right.
and then one thing right. you can do is just punch something or hit something or yell or scream or do whatever you, and let it out. And yeah, that's it. But there's another option, which is, what if you didn't get angry in the first place? Or what if you could turn the anger off right. in the first place
right.
whenever it occurs? So in your case, you got angry at yourself. So that meant you must have been thinking you did something you shouldn't have done.
Right. Or made it, or does that also qualify for like a
yeah.
mistake?
Well, mistake is something you shouldn't have done.
Like it wasn't.
Yeah.
Right. Right. But not, it's not like there wasn't a, it was just a, it was an accident that it was a mistake. It wasn't conscious. I guess that's where
yeah,
I'm.
Well, but, I'm yeah. But our brains, it's like we have, our brains are going to judge us negatively. It's going to tell you it's more important than it was. Okay.
Gotcha.
It was a serious mistake. All right. Even if it wasn't. Your brain's going to build it up to right. a serious mistake. That's the fake news generator.
Of course, because you need to start putting in the doubt and, well, this is going to happen to me and I'm going to get it written up. Yeah. And you know.
So that's the negative. So negative impacts are, you let yourself down firstly. And then there might be repercussions or something coming from your whoever you're working for or whatever. And then who was responsible for making the mistake?
Me.
Okay. So that's why you got angry. So that's why you got triggered to get angry at yourself, because you automatically perceived your mistake through those filters. Okay. And then you would have an opportunity to go back and look at each of those filters. So is it true that you did something bad and wrong by making the mistake that you made? And the answer is usually, well, not really. I mean, it's yes and no. The answer is you made a mistake. So right. inherently a mistake is never a right thing to do.
Right. right.
But is right. it really, is it wrong for human beings to make mistakes?
No, we all make mistakes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So if you're,
that's a good question.
If you're
right
human,
there.
You're going to make a mistake. And so it's really not, I mean, it's not a crime that you made a mistake. It's a natural part of being human. And yes, there may be things you have to clean up now, or things you have to patch up or correct.
Yeah. Or learn or go retrain on or something.
But the
yeah.
fact that you're a human being, you made a mistake, is not a crime. It's not a wrongdoing.
Right.
Okay. It happens to all of us. Were you negatively impacted? Is that true?
Not yet.
That's very good. So you haven't gotten any repercussions, and you may never get the repercussions. So you're imagining that you're going right. to get them and you haven't gotten them. Okay. Now you feel bad about yourself. But why did you feel bad about yourself? Because you overvalued the negativity of the mistake, which made you feel right. bad about yourself, when in truth you didn't have to, because everybody makes mistakes. So you really, you had a bad feeling about yourself, but that you could easily remedy that by realizing, wait a second, we all make mistakes. So there's no reason for me to negatively impact myself any further by that.
And then, well, and I did in the moment, I also didn't respond to, like, I didn't go grab a hammer out of my truck and start swinging at a piece of board that I have in my truck. I sat down. I just tried to calm myself down, because I was pretty shook up, you know what I mean? And I did some breathing, and I kind of started to get my mind off of it, you know, because it, you know, it was just one of those things where I used some, like, regular stress reducing techniques, but didn't go through the questions. So, like, that's going to be huge. Like, having these questions and having that ability to do the self-talk, I think, is more important than
And where it becomes even more important is sometimes we'll carry these things along. So, yeah, you may have calmed yourself down in the moment and let go of it in the moment, but then later on in the evening, you're going to rethink about it again. You go, oh my God, I really screwed up and I really feel bad. Or you're trying to go to sleep and, you know, you're going to remember the incident and it's going to keep you awake. And there's lots of, or it may go on for days for some people where, you know,
for other things.
Those are where it's really helpful to know the source of where it's coming from, so you can step in and you can deal with it at that level. And you can say, wait a second, you know, there was no reason to get angry at myself. I just made a mistake. I'm human. I didn't really and you're saying the mistake wasn't all that serious in any way. It didn't kill anybody. It didn't harm anybody.
Right.
You know, that kind of stuff. And then the last one is, were you 100% responsible or to blame for making that mistake?
Yeah, I think it was. I misread something and interpreted it. So, I mean, it wasn't a team effort. It was my decision.
Okay. All right. So
from something I heard and read,
when you go through this process and you look at the three filters, you may find that some of them may be correct. For example, if somebody decides to go out and drink and drive and kills a family member of yours in a car accident, and you're very angry at that person for doing that, and you go through these three things. Did they do something bad and wrong? Absolutely. Did they hurt or harm somebody? Absolutely. Were they 100% responsible or to blame? When you're angry, that's how you're looking at it. Now, if you look at the second one of those filters, the fact that they hurt or harm somebody, there's no way you're going to disprove that or say that was false.
Right.
The person died. That's pretty clear cut. Yeah, that second one is true. But, you know, the first one, the third one are still up for grabs. So there's still ways to wrestle with those and understand those. And people have done that. People have been very forgiving, you know, of the blame that they put on the other person. Maybe they had stuff going on in their life, or maybe they were under the influence. Well, they obviously were under the influence of alcohol, but maybe there were things that caused them to develop an alcohol.
Maybe it was
problem.
Somebody that did something to their drink,
or
and
trauma.
Not them,
you know, they were traumatized as kids. Right. I mean, there's all kinds of other causal factors that go into play and why they ended up in that particular day behind the wheel inebriated and caused this accident. So, but you can't really argue with the second one at all.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Okay. So it's like that. When you go through this process, it's not preordained. They're all going to be false, but usually there's one, at least one, that's up for grabs that may not be as accurate as we initially think it is. And sometimes it's two
that you could wrestle with and unpack. And
sometimes it's all three. I've had plenty of examples in my own life where it's been all three. Yeah.
So for some reason, as you're sitting here telling this story, there's one word that keeps on coming up in my brain. And if you can speak on that a little bit, and how you would, when it comes to the word humility, being humble and being able to accept whatever you, because it sounds like what you have to do when you do these questions to yourself is you have to be humble enough to be able to ask yourself these questions.
Absolutely.
And then answer them in a new light. You know what I mean? In a very honest way. And sometimes it's hard to be honest. And that when you're not being honest with yourself, you're not being humble, because quite frankly, the only way we have personal growth is when we're humble. Hey, I need to do something different with my life. Yes. Like you did. You had to have a humbling moment to have you change the direction of your anger from when you were a young man. Right. So speak on that a little bit. Do you talk about the humility part at all?
Absolutely. It's funny because so remember, here I am, a doctor, and I'm struggling with these emotional issues and relationship issues that I can't figure out how to solve. When everything else in my life, anytime I ran into a problem, I was able to eventually solve it, okay, or a challenge. I was able to eventually overcome it. I could not overcome these challenges. And then I go through all this stuff, all this personal development work. And all this. Finally, I come out the other end, okay, and I eventually figure out how to solve these problems. I realized that the solutions all came from humility. The solutions all came from being willing to admit I was wrong about my understanding of anger. I was wrong about my understanding of anxiety and public speaking fear. I had to admit I was wrong about my ideas about relationships and how to have a successful relationship. I thought I had a success model, but every time I applied it, it failed. So eventually I had to conclude it probably was not a success model. I better find out how to succeed in relationships, because what I think it takes to succeed is not working. So there was lots of humility. But what was interesting was I was blocked from being able to access that avenue of humility. And the thing that blocked me was my training as a physician.
Okay.
Because right. When you get trained to be a physician, you're trained, as you know, as a paramedic, you're trained the worst thing in the world is to be wrong.
Yeah.
Thou shalt not be wrong.
Thou shalt not harm.
Every day you're indoctrinated with thou shalt not be wrong. Being wrong is the worst thing you can do as a professional, as a doctor, as a healer, as a professional, as a paramedic, you know, a paramedic, whatever, you know. It was so ingrained after 7 years of training, it's so ingrained in you and in your brain.
It is.
That I couldn't access that avenue. It was like that door was closed for me. But it was the door. It was the only door that held the solution.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And this is such a profound moment of this podcast, because I think, you know, because this is a podcast that's geared towards, you know, first responders, their families. Uh-huh. I mean, anybody else can listen to it. If any high stress job can listen to Elevate and get the nuggets that we pull out of our guests and whatnot. But, you know, it's such a profound moment, because in the first responder world, firefighters, paramedics, police officers, you know, dispatch, we are trained, you know, to base, just like you said, we are trained to do, like, try not to be wrong, right? You know, we have a protocol. How did you not follow your protocol, mm-hmm. and what have you? And you know, sometimes you make mistakes. You forget that little part of the protocol that hasn't been used in 10 years, but that's why you do training to try to build that up, you know? And so I think it's so important right now for our listeners to understand that the human factor is that we will make mistakes no matter what, no matter how well we're trained. We will make mistakes, right? You know, even some of the best sports people in the world that are trained hours and hours and hours and hours still make mistakes on the ball field, right? And it just happens, right? They're not, even though they're the best at what they can do, they still make mistakes. We are if we're deemed the best at what we can do, or as best as I feel like I can do, I'm still going to make a mistake. And I understand that. And that goes back to that humility part, because if you can tell yourself in the beginning, you know, not to use it as a crutch, of course. You're not going to say, well, I'm going to make mistakes, so let me just go willy-nilly. No, you want to strive towards master, you know, not perfection, because there's no such thing as perfection. Yeah. But what we try to do in our department is we're trying to get everybody in the training division to a mastery level, which means that you're more than just the understanding of it. You understand the whys of it. And once you're at the mastery level, you have a better concept of how you can deliver care better. But it doesn't mean you can't make mistakes in that, even at the mastery level. And to be accepting of the fact that you can make mistakes is a huge, huge nugget. I talk about nuggets all the time on the podcast about my guests, and sometimes even they come out of me, you know, like, oh my gosh, that's a huge nugget. You know, like, that's a really, really important spot that I've realized before, and it's now being reiterated. You know, the humility and the fact that we're going to make mistakes is a big nugget that I want everybody to hear and accept and understand.
And it's not just the kind of mistakes you're talking about, but part of the humility is realizing that biologically our brains are designed to make mistakes in perception. What we see and what we think is true is often not true, like we've been talking about earlier, and that our brains are fake news generators, right? And that we're being constantly bombarded with external fake news, but also internal fake news, which is driving our emotions. And in fact, the external fake news understands emotions in human beings very well, because they know how to produce them. That's their business model.
They know how to make you angry.
Yep. They just give you a distorted.
It's called clickbait.
They give you a distorted view, a very distorted view of what happened. That fits those three filters. Somebody did something bad, wrong. Somebody hurt and harmed somebody. They were 100% responsible to blame. Even if none of those things are true, it doesn't matter.
Because they promote that,
and it gets you angry, and you click. Okay, or you buy or whatever.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
They understand human emotions. They understand how fake news generates human emotions. The problem is we don't understand. It's our own brain that's giving us fake news that's generating our emotions. And now I've revealed to your audience, and hopefully they've written that down, the three main filters that generate the emotion of anger. And if you know that formula for anger, you can start asking where the fake news is there.
Where they're coming from. Yeah. Right.
That's and if great. You start digging around, you'll usually find it.
Right. Exactly. So when it comes to stress, you know, first responders have a high stress job. Do you work with first responders or have you worked with first responders directly? And is that like, you know, because inherently we have more stress than a lot of jobs, right? I mean, it's just the stress levels are just, whether it be the actual runs themselves or being away from your family, that can be stressful. So we're inherently built with automatic stress that's going to happen. And healthcare workers too, same concept. I'm starting to blur the line between first responders and more of frontline workers, like ER nurses, ER doctors, ICU doctors, ICU nurses, respiratory therapists, you know, those people that are on the front lines dealing with stressful stuff. Situations on an hourly minute basis, you know, sometimes, you know, and, you know, with us as paramedics or police officers, you know, if everything's going good at home and you're at work and no calls are coming in, it's not that stressful. But as soon as the tones drop or as soon as you get the call to get somewhere, you know, then that everything jumps, you know, your heart rate jumps, you know, everything. So speak a little bit about stress and the first responder world from what maybe you've learned from, and maybe a story that you've helped a first responder in the concepts that you teach. And then we'll go into, Mort's got a very awesome gift for everybody because, April is a very special month for when it comes to stress. And he'll tell you all about that because he knows all the ins and outs. But talk a little bit about stress and then we can go into that part. Yeah,
so like I said, I've been helping people with stress and anger for 40 years. And I had a lot of stress myself, just like the anger and all this kind of stuff. And one of the insights I got about stress early on in 40 years ago was that stress is like this mythical entity. It's this buzzword that doesn't really exist as a thing. Yet there is a stress response in the body. That's true. Okay.
Right.
But
right. And there's good stress too, right?
No, there's not really good stress. It depends how you define it. Okay. And the way I define stress is stress is just a word that people use to stand for various problems in their life that they don't want to have or that are bothering them.
Gotcha.
Okay. So it's a big umbrella term. It's not like a disease. It's not like appendicitis, which is like a real condition. Okay. It's just a word. It's an abstraction and it stands for very specific problems. And for example, anger is a specific problem. Anxiety is a specific problem. Marital conflict, specific problem. Being called to an accident scene to, you know, be a first responder is a challenge and a problem. You know, you've got to assess the scene. You got people are all into distress and all that kind of stuff. Being faced with life and death situations where if you make a mistake, it can be critical. That's a problem. Okay. These are all problems in life that people experience. We use the same term stress to talk about them amongst each other. But the stress is never the problem. Okay. Those problems can stir up our physiology and create what we call a stress response, but it's the problems that are generating that we have. So if you tell me that paramedics have stress, I would say, good, let's list all the problems that paramedics have that fit under this umbrella. So to give an example, I worked many years ago. I had a cardiologist friend of mine who sent me one of his patients who turned out to be a homicide detective in Baltimore. And he had just had a heart attack and he was a runner. Okay. He used to do long distance running, but he had a heart attack and the heart attack was over. It was small. It was healed. And the cardiologist could not get the guy to go back to running. He was just petrified. of, he had a lot of anxiety and he was getting another heart attack. So he asked me if I would help him with his anxiety. So he came to see me, and I remember sitting down with him the first time I met him, and he tells me, he says, "Doc, I don't really know why I'm here. I know my cardiologist sent me. He thinks I have stress, but I don't have any stress."
Oh, the wow, a first responder denies that they have any stress. Go figure.
He just had a heart attack. Right. And he doesn't have any stress.
Come on, everybody. Let's get back to the humility part, right?
So I knew, given my understanding of what stress is, I knew he had some kind of a cockamamie definition of stress that he was referencing.
Okay.
That he didn't fit.
Cockamamie. I love that word. Cockamamie.
So I asked him, I said, "Well, tell me what your definition of stress is." He says, "Oh, that's easy." He says, stress is when you're so discombobulated, you're so, you know, overwhelmed that you can't function, you can't go to work. And you see, he had returned to work. So therefore I do not have stress.
The stress is gone. Okay. Right.
So I said, fine. I said, thank you. I said, now let's do something. Well, yeah. Let's take this word stress and let's just set it aside for a moment. Let me ask you a different question. Okay. And I looked at him right there and I said, are you having any problems in your life right now?
Okay.
His eyes like.
oh, it's that aha moment.
This was like
moment.
5 minutes into an hour long session. Okay. He spent the rest of the session just enumerating one after another, all the problems he was having. They just had all kinds of turmoil in the police department. They had a new chief come in. They jumbled everything. Everybody's in new positions, doing new things. They lowered the standards. He's getting signed these partners who don't know anything about what they're supposed to be doing. He's going on and on these calls with incompetent people. And then he's had this heart attack, and he's got his son's on the police force, and they're targeting him for retribution because he became a whistleblower, and now they're going to run him off the force. Meanwhile, he's got 20 years of loyalty to the police force, and he's watching his son go through this ordeal, right. And that's causing tension with his relationship with his wife. And he's like, problem.
right. Yeah, like just take the word stress and put the word problem, and then answer the question. Yeah. And it's like, okay.
So I worked with him for a while, and we had to sort out these various problems and deal with the ones that were most important and help him with each of those problems. And that's the best way to deal with stress, to eliminate it, is you got to get at the roots of these individual problems. But you can't lump, unfortunately, what we're telling everybody to do, this is another bad education thing, is we're telling everybody, don't focus on your problems, lump them all together in a basket, call it stress. And then just deal with the symptoms.
Then just do stress management.
Then just deal with the symptoms of your stress. So, that's the best you can do.
Wow.
No, it's not the best.
Wow. This is such a profound conversation. I'm so glad that, this is not an April Fool's, everybody. That's when we're recording this. It's on April Fool's.
Stress does not exist. And by the way, Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny don't exist either. They're both concepts that were made up that are not real.
Right. Yeah. So turn off the podcast if your kids that are less than 9 are gonna listen to this. Oh, awesome. Well, when it comes to the word stress and what you have to offer everybody because of April and what month this is, go ahead and tell us a little bit about that.
So April is National Stress Awareness Month. Okay.
Or maybe National Problem Awareness Month.
What we really should call it, but then nobody would publish.
Nobody would know about it. Right. But,
So it's National Stress Awareness Month. And it's something that I actually started. I actually started National Stress Awareness Month back in 1992.
Oh.
So I'm the originator.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And so it happens every year, and I promote it. And I really, it's really there for everybody. Anybody who's working in the health field or has any interest in promoting information about stress, to use it as an opportunity to do that. So some years I give out information and some years I don't. But this year, because of my book coming out that teaches people about anger, it's called Dr. Orman's Life-Changing Anger Cure. And I talk about my coaching program that I take people through, and I basically give them everything that I teach in that program, in that book. Okay. So for the month of April, I'm making that to support Stress Awareness Month this month or this year. I'm making that book available for free to people in a PDF format. Okay.
Okay.
And all they have to do is go to aprilbookoffer.com. April.
Okay. That'll be below.
Aprilbookoffer.com. And you can sign up and get that book. And awesome. It will help you. It'll go in much more depth about all the things we've been talking about today regarding anger.
That's great. Oh man, that is. I'll tell you what, if you don't take advantage of that, go into the notes or go into the show description that's going to be below this video and go ahead and click on that link. I'll make sure it's at the top because this is important. I think out of I've been building a course to help the resiliency and the fortification of the first responder for about 7 months now, because I went through my own issues and I came back on the other side, and I'm an educator and I'm like, okay, listen, there are some things I learned during my process that I had to go through that I learned the hard way when it came to dealing with my emotions and dealing with stress and problems, you know, and how to package all that stuff that were never taught, right? Never taught in the educational process. Maybe they sprinkle it in and things are a little bit better now after COVID, because the whole world was a mental health crisis, you know, during COVID. Absolutely. So we're a little bit more aware to it. We're becoming more, less and less stigmatized in the first responder world, you know, and I'm an educator, I'm a public speaker, and I have the capability of getting out and teaching things, right? So I'm making a course to do just that, to teach people the nuggets that I learned. And it's not just one smoking gun, you know, it's just like CPR, everybody. There's not one thing that you do during CPR that makes you, I've said this before in podcasts, there's not one thing you do during CPR that saves a life. It's a bunch of different small things, right? And it's the same thing when it comes to stress management, problem management, now that we're defining it as problems, and just, you know, and resiliency as a first responder. There's small things that we can do, we can learn, and it's, we can, you know, maybe this concept helps you. Maybe just this anger module would help you understand the way that things are coming into your life, your first responder life and your home life. Maybe it's anger and it's something else. And there's other things that you can find and I'm bringing to you during these podcasts and during my course that you can say, oh, I didn't even know they had that. You know, I didn't even know they had that concept. There's brainwave entrainment. What? And that's going to be on a future episode, you know? So you're like, so just understand, everybody that's listening to this, is that the Elevate podcast are bringing you the nuggets, right? We're bringing you the things that you can go down, do some research on. Hopefully the research is already done for you. Just click on a link and read about it or listen about it. And you can see if it's going to work for you. And because that's all I want to do. My biggest thing is I don't want anybody to be in a spot like I was. I don't want anybody to be in a spot like several other people I've known were, you know, and we want to, you know, there's, we all know that first responder world has incredible rates that are higher than the general public. Our divorce rates are much higher, 75%. Our substance abuse possibilities are much higher, 30% higher than the normal person. You know, unfortunately, our suicide rates are much higher, 10 times more likely than the normal public. And those are the things I want to start through the awareness, through my course, through bringing people on like Dr. Mort Orman, talking about some of the things of why things work to get us to get those numbers to be squashed, reduced, you know, because it's important. You know, caring about others means caring about yourself and caring about your fellow first responder. Yeah. And, you know, I'm so happy that I brought you on, Dr. Orman, and you've provided so much great information already. Anything else you want to, where else can they find information about you other than the book that'll be down the thing? Where else can they find information about you, or if they want to read up on you
they can go to my website, which is docorman.com, and there'll be some,
okay, that'll be down there too. There. Yep.
And, just to say, are you aware of the origin of the word doctor? The Greek origin?
No, I'm not. No. That's okay. I'm 26 years in healthcare, and I'm not aware of the. Is this an April Fool's joke?
No. It fits right in with what you were just saying, which is why you really called it out. I mean to say that the original Greek word that doctor comes from, the root is the word for teacher.
Okay.
So literally, you know, okay. the best of doctorhood. It comes from our ability to teach.
Teaching.
And also, we.
That's why, right? That's why other people can have a PhD and be called doctor, you know, doctor so and so, but they're a PhD in music. They're a teacher of music. Yeah. Okay. Wow, that makes sense.
So we're both.
I've learned something.
We're both educators.
That's right. Of course. Yeah, and that's you know, that's where I find, you know, my wheelhouse is being an educator. Yeah. You know, I've had the choice to go and become an officer in my department. And I chose not to because, not that I couldn't be an educator, but it took away, it took away in my department, it took away the kind of education I like to do that I've found a very good niche in, mm-hmm. right? Where I can go out to my departments, I can go out to my stations, and I can teach one-on-one with, well, one-on-three, you know, we have three people on every truck. And that's how I like to educate. Now, when it comes to becoming a lieutenant or an officer in my department, that gets stripped away because you have more you have different responsibilities. Not a bad thing, not a wrong thing, mm-hmm. but it's just, you have different responsibilities. So I can still educate in a class form, which I like doing as well, but it's not that interpersonal where I can really share the knowledge of being a respiratory therapist for 26 years and the things I've learned in the hospital, being a paramedic on an 911 system, you know, and share the knowledge I've done that for the last 20 years, you know? So I just, you know, I don't, you know, it's one of those things where being an educator is very important to me, you know, and it defines me, and that's who I am. And if you'd ask people that know me, they'll be like, tell us about Kyle and what you feel about him as an educator. They're like, oh yeah, yeah. He loves doing that. Like, they can see it in me. They can see it in my passion. They can see it in my delivery. And I've had people come up to me and tell me, hey, listen, you've explained this in a way, even things like CPR that we've been taught ever since day one, you know, this was explained differently to me than I didn't know the science behind it. Nobody ever told mm-hmm. us that. And you brought the science mm-hmm. to me. Not that the science was my invention, but I brought it sure. to them, and I was able to deliver to them and get them to understand that, hey, listen, it's not just about this one thing, you know? Sure, so, sure. But yeah, anything else that you want to talk about or you want to mention before we leave?
Anyone can support you or help you in your course or in your endeavors to, you know, educate paramedics. I'd be happy to explore that with you if you're interested. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to have you on again, or maybe even during my courses, maybe have you bring, maybe when I think a part of me feels like I need to add an anger management module to my course.
Elimination.
Yeah. Anger elimination. There you go. So, but yeah. So once again, thanks so much, sure. Dr. Orman, for spending the time with me today and bringing this information. I mean, I'm already I was in a great mood before I came on. I'm even in a better mood because I really feel that you've given us something that we can actually tangibly put into place if we just be humble and start asking those three questions to ourselves as we move through our career and through our even in our personal life.
This is especially in our personal life.
Right, right. Yeah, because stress and problems aren't just at work. Right. It's, you know, a lot of stuff comes out, you know. You know, every time the garage broke, I was on duty, right? You know, that's not fun. You know, it's not fun to have stuff go wrong at your house when you can't get there to help yeah. the family yeah. fix it. Yeah. So, all right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Orman. I appreciate your time, and we'll be talking to you soon. And thanks a lot, everybody.
All right. Great.
So thank you. Yep. No problem. Don't forget to hit that like, share, subscribe button, you know, the bell to get people to get notifications. If you're listening to any part of this episode and it strikes a chord with you and you have somebody in mind that hears this, don't hesitate to share this with them. Grow the Elevate podcast for us by sharing it with the people that you feel may need this, whether that be a first responder, family member, or just somebody that you may know that may be in a high stress, high problem situation that this particular episode may help them with. Share this episode with them. So on behalf of Elevate podcast and myself and Dr. Orman, everybody take care. Thanks a lot for tuning in.
That's a wrap for this episode of Elevate, brought to you by Frontline Empowerment Solutions, your partner in building resilience and fostering continued growth. If you found something valuable today, don't keep it to yourself. Share it with someone who could use it. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell so you never miss out on our next conversation. We're here to bring you more stories and insights, all aimed at strengthening the first responder community. Together, let's keep elevating each other. One episode at a time.